From here at Eoica in Tuscany, welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, after copping a load of grief for being easy and not very gravelly, we tell you why the Gravel World Championships was harder than you think and why it matters.
We've also got news of what Mark Cavendish has in common with James Bond. Not immediately obvious, perhaps. Also, why Lachlan Morton is a bigger legend even than previously thought, and why the cycling utopia of the Netherlands is going to seem a little less idyllic if one politician gets their way. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that Lachlan Morton is a new world record holder.
Yeah, on Saturday he rode into his hometown of Port Macquarie in New South Wales, having completed his 14,200-kilometre ride around Australia in just 30 days. In doing so, he took a week off the previous record.
It's absolutely crazy, and we'll have more details coming up later in the show.
Yeah, and we also learned that potentially the next big thing in cycling is automatically inflating and deflating your tyres.
Not brand new technology, is it? Teams have been experimenting with it for a couple of years now.
They have indeed, yeah. Also, automatically deflating tyres, we should say, has been around for decades.
Yes. Punctures, yes, as they're otherwise known. But on Saturday, this new technology was used by a certain Marianne Vos to win a world championship for the very first time.
An elite gravel world championships.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, one of the few races she'd actually never won before, although probably only because this was the third edition.
Not many chances,
wasn't
it?
Yeah. And we've actually got, by the way, a bit of a closer look at that tech in a GCN tech video that went up on Sunday.
Good, good.
So it's called Gravar.
Clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, whilst it was the third edition for Marianne Vos, or for most pro riders, I don't know how many times she'd done it, doesn't matter really, because what I'm about to say is it was a first edition for a certain Si Richardson.
Oh, yeah.
Who was representing Team Great Britain at the race. Not in the main elite race, obviously, but the
obviously,
man veterans category. How was it?
Some people actually asked me whether I was racing elites. Mm. I think out of politeness.
Yes. Yeah.
But anyway, how was it? You can all wait for the GCN video that's coming out on this, but honestly, it was one of the wildest, coolest cycling things I have ever done. Like, genuinely, Belgium put on a brilliant event, and I feel very privileged to have taken part. Genuinely, it was just like, it was bonkers.
You have been buzzing since you got back, which is great to see. I feel like you've omitted one detail, which we might find out about on the main video, I guess. But can you answer it here and now? How were you beaten by Matt Stevens?
Well, I mean, it was a bit of a blast from the past, that wasn't
it? That name.
Yeah, no, this is Matt Stevens, who won Unbound in 2017, rather than commentator Matt Stevens, who used to be working on GCN, which, to be clear, he would be in two age categories above me. And actually, he's so old now, he'd have been racing on the Saturday.
That's commentator Matt Stevens rather than the Matt Stevens.
The Matt Stevens,
Unbound,
yes.
Known who, as Dirk Kander in 2017. Clear as mud, I think. So thank you very much for clearing that up, Si.
That's all right. Also, I should point out that I did beat Valtteri Bottas, even though he started several minutes ahead of me, because he's younger than me.
Do you think it might be because he punctured in the last 5Ks, from what I read?
That is a minor detail, and no, it would not have mattered if it was the last 5K. Anyway, tell you what, he's a popular guy.
He is, isn't he?
Like, I was riding around, so I did get to ride with him for a little bit, and yes, like, he just, like, everyone knew who he was. It's bonkers.
Amazing, isn't it? Only a Formula One driver as well.
I know. Right, now, back to Gravel World. I did have a bit of a chuckle at all of the comments under that aforementioned tech video on Sunday about how it wasn't actually a gravel race. And you know what? I love that this conversation will not go away. Like, it's been following around this discipline for years. And I think it's partly why, when the term gravel bike was first coined, everyone said, it's just a stupid name.
As in, you don't need to ride on gravel to be doing gravel riding.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to be on mountains to ride a mountain bike. You don't have to do long rides to ride an endurance bike.
No. And you don't need to be going to uni to ride a unicycle.
No. You really don't. But it did make me think, right, they're trying to fit all these different disciplines of cycling into a really narrow box. It's just a bit weird, really, isn't it? So underneath that hot tech video, we had loads of similar comments about how the World Championships weren't really gravel. So people were saying that if you can run slick tyres, it's not gravel. Or one person said simply that the course was just pathetic.
Pathetic? But was it pathetic, Simon?
I loved it.
But was it pathetic?
Well, fair point. No, let's look at it, shall we? Okay, so firstly, in the men's race, we had a solo winner. And in the women's, we had a two-up sprint, right?
Which is usually a good sign that it's a tough race, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And how many people contested the finish at Unbound this year?
Well, from memory, Si, I would say about 9, I think it was, in the women's race.
Well remembered. I actually had to Google that. Now, it was a two-up in the men's race as well. Lachlan Morton won it, of course, as his warm-up for riding around Australia. Mm. Do you know what speed he averaged?
Oh, gosh, was it... I think it was like 35 k's per hour for about 9 hours, I think.
It was, yeah, well remembered. Meanwhile, Vanderpool averaged 38 k an hour, but for just 4 hours, 45 minutes.
Now, where you're going here.
That tells me that the World Championships was still pretty hard, right? Furthermore, do you know what tyres Lachlan Morton was using?
That I couldn't find. I can't remember.
Can't remember. No. Right, 38mm wide Vittoria Tirreno gravel
Those
dries.
Those were the ones, yes. Yeah. That is narrow. And slick.
It is, isn't it? Yes.
So I guess what you're trying to say is that Unbound actually is too easy to be a gravel race.
Well, I'm not saying that. No, Vanderpool, meanwhile, used 38mm Vittoria Gravel Zero tyres. So fractionally less tread, but he is Matthew Vanderpool. Mm. And as we see in cyclocross every winter, the usual laws of physics don't apply to him.
That is correct. But yes. You can't measure a gravel race by the tyres that people are using even in the elite race, can you?
No.
I mean, Keegan Swenson used 40mm slick tyres at Steamboat Gravel in 2023. And then this year, they used 60mm wide mountain bike tyres.
Yeah.
Was this year's Steamboat more legit? Can I say that word?
You can say legit, yeah.
Was it more legit than previous years?
Well, exactly, right? No one questioned how gravelly Steamboat was in 2023 versus 2024, right? My experience of US gravel races is strictly limited. I think I've only done Steamboat gravel. But given it's one of the most popular events out there, and it doesn't seem to have anyone moaning that it's not gravelly enough, even though Keegan Swenson won it on a pair of slick tyres, whereas both the riders that I actually mentioned in the GCN Tech video that are running slick tyres, flatted, punctured out.
Did they?
Yeah, which suggests that the Gravel World Championships was arguably gravelier than Steamboat.
Yeah.
But anyway, I feel like I can at least make some kind of comparison between a proper gravel race and, well, whatever you want to call the UCI World Champs.
This, by the way, is what we were talking about over the coffee machine or next to the coffee machine this morning, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it actually was what we were talking about. So firstly, I think it's worth pointing out that the TV coverage didn't show the first 80 kilometres of the course, right? So I think the organisers had deliberately created a finish circuit where they could film from motorbikes.
Makes sense,
yeah, exactly, right? So you can actually watch the race unfold. So I think it was a little bit less technical than the first part of the race. There was no super chunky long sections of gravel, but there were plenty of rocks causing punctures. And then there were those like really cool muddy tracks through farmers' fields and things.
We came up with a definition of gravel, didn't we, at the coffee machine?
We
to conclude
did,
our
yeah.
chat. Do you want to hear it? They've all said yes.
Okay, cool.
So the definition of gravel. Gravel is what rocks were and what will one day be mud.
Exactly. So it had gravel, it had new gravel, and then what was formerly gravel as well. Plus a stack of cobbles.
There are a lot of cobbles,
yeah. Oh, my God. Like, they're really rough cobbles in Belgium, aren't they?
Yeah, even on those tyres.
Yeah. And then they had these amazing hard-packed, like, fine gravel trails through the woods, some of which you could see in the TV coverage, and that actually on TV looked like they were tarmac, but they definitely weren't.
No. I think Vanderpool's tactics put that into context, really, don't they? Because he was right that a group would stay together on the finish circuit, so made it as hard as possible on the more difficult first third of the race.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone was knackered by the time they got to the slightly less demanding bit. And that would have been my tactic as well.
Would have been, but wasn't.
No, it wasn't quite, no. Anyway, the other thing that the World Champs has that lots of US gravel races don't corners.
Corners.
I was looking at the course map of Unbound this morning. There's one section with no corners at all for over 10 miles. How is that technical? Honestly, yesterday, meanwhile, was bonkers. And because the speed was so high, it added in this huge element of technicality. Not like a mountain bike race, right? But it definitely rewarded skill. When you watch, like, Voss or Vanderpool railing those corners, and there was quite a lot of, like posts and stuff, like just like general stuff that you could wallop into.
No, you don't want to do that at your age, do you?
Not at my age, but I wouldn't want Vanderpool to do it either.
No, well, he's unlikely to. Yeah. His skill set, isn't he? So what you're basically saying is it was a good gravel course.
It was an awesome course, yeah. And I love European gravel, right? There's just so much more of an assault on the senses. What with those like constant turns, changes in surface, and what doesn't come across on TV, I don't think, is just how it's all woven into like a busy, historic, densely populated area. Like, it's different and no less brilliant than the more established US events.
I think we know, don't we, that we had very worthy winners of the elite races, because in Voss and much of Vanderpool, you've got the greatest of all time and a once-in-a-generation talent. Would they win Unbound? Well, they definitely could.
I think they definitely could.
Yeah. Whether they'd want to put that time into preparing for it, maybe not.
No. I don't think there's enough corners in there to keep Mathieu van der Poel interested, personally.
He's got more patient over the years, hasn't he?
You've got to be pretty patient to ride down a 10-mile dead straight gravel track. Now, I do think, though, that the UCI should have a Gravel World Championships on an Unbound-style course.
They should have it in the US, I think.
Well, yeah.
Sooner rather than later.
They should, but I mean, we say it like the UCI should do it. They've got to have someone actually promote it. Like, the UCI doesn't organise events, right? They have to get event organisers to organise events on their behalf. Like, I think a lot of people don't necessarily make that distinction, but it's an important one. They can't just suddenly decide to tip up an Emporia and...
No, very true.
Put on an event.
And it costs a lot of money, doesn't it, to do an event like that?
An awful lot of money. But yeah, I think the Gravel World Championships course should change to reflect... like all the different types of gravel racing out there. And then you get different gravel racing champions, don't you? Just like the road race. Yeah. It's a broad church, right?
I'll put it over to you lot at home, I think, at this point. What do you think? And what did you think about the gravel course on Saturday? Can I just say, I get the sense at this point that when the World Gravel Championships rock up for the third year, a lot of people are like, isn't this the bit where we're supposed to say it's not a proper Gravel World Championships course, is it? And they just pile in and say what they were saying the first year, and they're going to carry on saying it for years to come.
Oh, well, maybe they are. I certainly feel like some of the comments that I read were from people that hadn't paid all that much attention to it. Like, if you watch
just
a bit
copy
of it...
paste.
Well, that's it. If you watch a bit of it and you see someone riding around on a load of tarmac, then it's easy to think that. But... you know, there's still a reasonable amount of tarmac in proper gravel. Belgian Waffle Ride, for example, 50% tarmac.
Is it?
I was learning this morning.
Well, I might do that one then.
Yeah. Anyway, if you didn't think that the Gravel World Champs was gravelly enough, a quick reminder to watch the highlights from the Paris Tour Road Race at the weekend, because people complained that that was too gravelly, didn't they?
Well, Patrick Lefevre, boss of Soudal Quickstep, has refused to send a team there for a number of years now, unless they change it back to a proper road race. Can't ever please everyone, can you?
No, I love it. Why do all you cyclists just moan about really pointless things?
Well, I mean, if we didn't have things to moan about, there wouldn't be many GCN shows with the...
We don't moan about stuff.
Well, no, true. No.
We just like to tease people who do moan.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with news... of cycling shorts.
Don't you love it when that happens?
I do, yeah.
So these particular shorts were spotted by Road CC on Kickstarter, and they're called Wavewear, and they claim to reduce lactic acid in your legs by up to 35%.
So up to 35% could also include 0%?
That would be within the realms of their claim, yes.
Also... we kind of don't really think about lactic acid in that way anymore, do we? Because science sort of suggests that actually lactate is a very useful fuel.
Fuel, yes.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that is the latest science,
I think,
basically.
It is, yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And so possibly then not a Kickstarter to invest in if they're removing something that you actually need.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they're not removing something you actually need, are they? It's clearly, it's just a load of pants, basically.
I see what you did there.
Thanks, mate. Right, moving on. What do James Bond and Sir Mark Cavendish have in common?
Ooh, I give up.
That was quite quick. You're not giving much thought.
No.
All right, okay.
You need to make it snappy.
All right, they are both now linked with Aston Martin. Cavendish recently took delivery of a DBX 707, having become their first ever global high-performance ambassador.
Ooh. If Dacia are looking for any global low-performance ambassadors, we're both available, aren't we, Si?
Well, I mean, I would say, yeah, and we'd be completely free of charge. But no, we're not anymore.
Oh, no, we're not. No, we're not available. So we can't do it for 10% off a Dacia car and a free T-shirt.
No, we definitely can't, mate. We're cruising around in an ID Buzz.
We are.
Yeah,
anyway, Cav also picked up his knighthood recently, didn't he? Hence the Sir Cav.
Yeah.
But moving on, some more details on that amazing world record from Lachlan Morton. What an absolutely bonkers ride he's done there. So he completed the 14,200 kilometres in 30 days, 9 hours, 59 minutes. That works out an average daily distance of 470 kilometres per day.
For a month.
For a month.
Yeah, a genuinely mind-boggling feat, wasn't it? I mean, admittedly, some say it wasn't proper ultra-endurance riding.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't really, like, you know, he had a camper van following
him.
That's
what I commented.
Yeah. But no, to put into some sort of perspective, this year's Giro d'Italia, Tour de France and Vuelta a España together totaled just 10,200 kilometres.
Yes, I was working this out, actually. So he did the equivalent of a grand tour distance every week for 30 days.
The guy has incredible mental fortitude.
And balls of steel, obviously.
I don't really want to think about it, mate, to be honest with you. But yeah, he is robust, isn't
probably
he?
A better way of putting it.
Yeah, in every respect. One of the things that Mark Beaumont prizes as being a... Top thing for an ultra-endurance rider. But no, hats off to Lachlan, not just for the ride, of course, but also for raising $127,000 in the process, equivalent to about $86,000. And he was doing it for the Indigenous Literacy Foundation.
Which is an organisation focused on providing books and learning resources to Indigenous children living in remote communities across Australia, plenty of which, of course, he would have ridden through whilst navigating around the country.
Yeah. Navigating wasn't that hard, was it? We were teasing Unbound for having 10 miles of straight. What's the Nullarbor Plains? Like 100 miles with no corners.
Also, but this reminds me of my lap of Lake Tahoe. Right? You remember the one where I went wrong?
I think you might have to fill people in. What happened?
About 21 years ago, I went to Lake Tahoe and needed to get some training in, so I just thought I'd do a lap, which was going really well because... like what you were insinuating for Lachlan, you just didn't have to do any lefts or rights. You just followed the lake round. It's about 80 miles, I think. And then at a point, I just realised I couldn't see the lake anymore and that I should have turned to stay on the lake. And that's what I'm saying about Lachlan, that you probably get so used to not having to turn.
Oh, I see.
If you have to take one, it could go very wrong. Because before you know it, you've gone 100 k's the wrong direction.
Oh, God, imagine that. Anyway, most of Lachlan's rides started at midnight.
I know, I saw that.
Now, well, that sounds a bit weird to me, but so he could avoid the heat of the day as much as possible. Though he also looked like he was really cold more often than not, or sometimes anyway. But he also then tended to finish at around 5 or 6 p.m, at which point he could get dinner and have an all too brief sleep.
I can't believe what he's managed to do. Anyway, we are hoping to get a word with Lachlan once he's recovered and maybe woken up from his hibernation. So we'll chat more about this amazing record in a coming show. But you know what we're going to do next, Si, don't you?
Yes, we are going to bring up the round the world record attempt.
We are. Before we do, to reiterate, what Lachlan has already achieved is mind-blowing.
Yes.
And he should very much be celebrating his current accomplishment. But it's only natural, isn't it, to then start making comparisons?
It is indeed, yeah. I mean, that is but a warm-up for the ultimate prize in ultra-endurance. So Mark Beaumont, on his round-the-world record in 2017, averaged 370 kilometres a day. Mm. Lachlan averaged about 100 kilometres a day more than Beaumont But there are a couple of key differences.
Key differences, yeah. So firstly, Lachlan was riding for 30 days and Mark for 78.
Okay, that is quite a big difference, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I haven't ridden that sort of distance 2 days back to back.
I've never ridden that distance once.
No, I don't think you should bother trying, man. Honestly, I don't think there's that much to recommend it. But I suspect there is a very big difference between doing that for a month and 2.5 months.
You'd have thought so.
Yes,
wouldn't
yes,
you?
He would, yeah.
I'd say that as well. And then secondly, Mark's average daily distance you quoted, 370Ks a day, that includes the travel days and therefore flights that he had to take between the continents. So his average ride distance for the days he actually rode would be slightly higher, wouldn't
Word,
it?
Would, yeah. It would be interesting to know whether Lachlan actually thinks he could beat it, wouldn't he? Whether, in fact, he's even interested at all or whether it was just his team manager saying he was a couple of years ago. He's probably been desperately trying to get rid of that ever
probably,
since.
Probably, yes. I mean, it's horrible, really, to focus on something else whilst he's currently doing a world record. But anyway, we shall move on to some news now from the Netherlands, where the Minister of Infrastructure and Water Management, Barry Madlener, is aiming to have 25% of bike users wearing helmets in the country by 2034.
It feels like that's not really in his remit.
No, I know.
Really. But anyway, beyond that, Barry's goal is to have almost all cyclists wearing helmets, which is claimed will reduce annual road deaths by 50 and serious injuries by 800.
Which sounds worth it, doesn't it, in some way? Especially if they're not made mandatory.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great to reduce the casualties, right? 100%. Like, that's 50 fatalities a year. That's a lot. That's not good at all. But I sort of feel a little bit like I worry about the perception of it, right? So where bikes there are as easy as walking, I sort of feel like if you suggest that people have to wear a helmet, even if you're not making it compulsory, suddenly wearing a helmet adds a barrier that isn't there when walking. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yes.
It's like you're suddenly saying, like, oh, we better put a helmet on because that's dangerous. Mm. And then suddenly people are like, oh, I better not ride a bike because it's dangerous. Whereas before, they wouldn't have even given it a second thought.
Here's hoping that this is not a factor, because we always hold the Netherlands up, don't we, as an example of a country that used to be like most others when it comes to cycling infrastructure and prioritising cars and motor vehicles that now isn't in the major cities. Anyway, one to watch.
Yeah.
All right, here's a weird story from the United Kingdom. So a new tunnel in London under the River Thames is operating a bike shuttle bus.
Yeah. So the tunnel is for cars only, but bikes will be able to get on special bike buses so they can get from one side to the other. Now, initially, I was a little bit grumpy about this, thinking that it sounds, well, firstly, like a massive pain in the arse, and why can't we just ride through?
Yeah.
But then I learned that it actually costs £4 to drive through the tunnel, whereas the bike bus is free.
No,
thought, actually, that does sound like quite a good deal.
Yeah.
I don't think you can ride through any tunnels.
Good job you read that bit so we didn't have to moan.
Yeah, you see on the show, exactly. See, almost a moan, but not. Yeah.
Right, before we leave cycling shorts for this week, a reminder of GCN's weekly club ride on Zwift. So every Wednesday.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I'm saying, yeah, you're right.
All right, okay.
I was just interrupting you saying, well done, go on, you're doing really well.
Thanks very much. I thought we were about to moan about something. Anyway, you can join Alex Payton this week. They're every week on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. UK time. I'm also going to promise to do some at a different time of day. I can't do 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Dude's got street dance. But I can do some lunch times.
Oh, there you go.
Stay tuned for some lunchtime rides with Dan, UK time. Hack /bodge of the week now. Don't forget, you can get involved in this part of the show. All you need to do is either click on the link in the description below this video or type into your browser globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
I think you could get away with saying legit earlier on, but I think type into your browser is not something.
I shall swiftly move on then.
Yes,
to the first one this week that comes in from Mike in Calgary. I like thinking about how people think of their username on any given site. I'll just go with Mike in Calgary.
I like that. Hey, Mike in Calgary.
Tells you everything you need to know, doesn't it? Anyway, winter is coming. Mike added...
Of course you think that, Mike, Canadians. Winter is coming, guys, and it's going to be a hell of a lot tougher than yours. Yes,
our winter's coming as well. It's brutal. Anyway, putting pogies / bar mitts apparently restricts space on the bar. So
yes, I can imagine.
Not having a 3D printer, Mike welded together a short piece of bar stock and a stub of lube, a tube, not lube, sorry, to make a landing place for my bar mount headlamp just above the front wheel. I can still reach the lamp. It's lower in the eyes of oncoming cyclists on the path. And I can find it lights the road in a more effective manner. So wins all around.
Mike, I love this. Firstly, whilst we like 3D printing very much, can't beat good old-fashioned welding of stuff, can you? So that is wicked. But also, what an awesome place to mount a light. Now, you can't get... if you've got disc brakes, you can't stick a light there. But if you've got rim brakes, presumably, you could just quickly put something under there, maybe?
Yeah.
But what a wicked place to have it. Centrally mounted, so it's nice and symmetrical. You don't have to look at it from your handlebars.
Yeah, it just turns the direction you're going.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a full-blown hack for me, Mike.
Hack from me as well.
Yeah, and yeah, may you have a good winter. We'll be thinking of you, okay? Yeah. Right, next up, this one, talking of usernames, middle-aged bike dad. Could be from anywhere. Seen in Bloomsbury, London, 2-for-1 special, ankle sock holding tube and tyre levers, serving as a seat bag. Pretty sure I remember reading an article from Kaylee Fretz of Escape Collective about something along those lines. But this one, knickers / underpants hung on the seat, possibly serving as theft deterrent or a drying rack. Oh, that's quality. I mean, I would imagine how minging, maybe we shouldn't go there, but how minging has a pair of pants, it's like underwear, got to be in order to stop someone stealing, like a Pinarello? What do you think? Do you think people would be like, I'm just gonna...
I think you could get your thumb and forefinger on the least mean part of it and just pull it off, surely.
Yeah. You think like, okay, maybe.
I mean, if I'm thinking about nicking a bike, I don't think it'd put me off that much.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Anyway, that's a massive bodge, whatever it was.
Yeah, bodge from me as well. I'm going to have to paraphrase this one from Hoverfella slightly because it's a long message. We have read it all.
We have.
But a bit long to read out on the show. But essentially, Hoverfella had a nasty crash at 60 k's per hour a few years ago. He didn't want to put his bike into the tip. So wanted to save it for indoor training. So in a very time-consuming process, he carefully sanded the paint and primer on the damaged area of this BMC frame. Wrapped around 3 layers of carbon mat, applied resin and wrapped everything with the special shrink tape. Then got a second-hand 10-speed Shimano 105 group set and built up a new BMC Zwift machine, which has now ridden about 10,000 Zwift kilometres.
That's so cool. I'm full approval of this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't ride it outside, even though actually you can... When you get a carbon fibre frame repaired by a professional company, like it's just as good as it was before. Mm. But I think there's something about doing it DIY. You just wouldn't quite know. But yeah, what a brilliant way of keeping a really nice bike out of landfill.
It actually looks really good as well, doesn't it?
It does look really cool.
A hack from me.
Yep, and that was a fishing rod repair kit that allowed him to do that. Yeah, I think that's what it says here. Carbon...
I paraphrased too much.
Fishing pole repair
important
kit.
Important detail.
Yep. So there you go. It even survived a few sprints over 1,000 watts. Good work. No, I think that's wicked. So yeah, full-blown hack from me.
Hack from me as well.
Okay, and then lastly, we've got this one from Neosus, the Frankenbike. Found this bike at the MIT campus in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I wouldn't want to meet the owner for whatever reason. So we've got a tall bike here, but what seems particularly concerning is the fact that it's got some kind of kid's xylophone attached to the handlebars. Is that a xylophone or a glockenspiel? Don't know what the difference is. But yeah, that, I mean, but it's legitimately locked up to a bike rack.
It's like someone's ridden that to
university.
Who's going to nick it?
I don't know, mate. You told me that you'd be more than happy picking a pair of grotty pants off.
For a normal bike, if I'm in a desperate situation, I need 50 quid.
All right.
I'm joking. I've already never nick a bike.
Thanks for clarifying that.
But I mean, I can't imagine who would want to nick this.
No, I can't.
But anyway, probably better safe than sorry, as they say. Let's lock it up.
Yeah, owned by an exhibitionist, clearly, if you like turning heads when you're bicycling around, buy a tall bike.
Yeah.
So there we go. Right, I picked up a very good...
Is that Budge?
Oh, massive Budge.
Okay, both going Budge.
Yeah, we picked up a very cool-looking Hack forward slash Budge when we were at the Gravel Worlds, actually. Yeah. Homemade frame bag. So go check it out over on GCN Tech, hot gravel tech video. Feel like it let the side down slightly after we were talking about brand new bikes from Ridley and hot Orbea Terras, and then, yeah, there was that. But anyway, see what you think. Maybe we'll put it in next week.
Also, just before we finish this week's Hack and Bodge, I couldn't help but notice underneath last week's show, there were a few comments saying that Si and I, well, basically, we'd been so enamoured with that Gary Fisher mountain bike frame that we'd missed the fact there was no rear brake. It was like single speed. Apparently, there was a rust somewhere. But we said it was a hack.
Yeah, it is a hack.
Said it was a Bodge.
It's a hack bike. Isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fine.
Anyway, make sure you get involved, ready for next week's show.
Yeah. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a very funny caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second after, of course, we've done the results from last week.
Indeed. This was the photo from last week for podcast listeners. It's a rear view of Pogacar at the UCI World Championships where you can't see his head.
He's very aero.
A couple of notable mentions. First up from Matthew MG, put Tade, the headless Watsman. Beermat96 put Tade Pogacar's attempt to use the Zwift Konami cheat code did not work as intended. Those of you that use Zwift will understand that one. And then the winner, Raymond van der Ben. Caption. Pogacar showed the whole peloton the true meaning of Catch 22. Didn't describe that bit.
You
to
didn't.
Podcast listeners, did I? But he was number 22 on the day, so his numbers at the back represent that.
Oh, I like that. Catch 22. Yeah, well done, Ramon. Get in touch and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. When we say get in touch, Facebook is the preferred method of contact for this particular reason.
Yeah. This week's photo comes from, I can't remember what the name of the race was now, and it doesn't say in the link either. Anyway.
Oh, I saw this.
It's not Elfstedt Ronde, was it? Because that was the return win of Tucker van der Horn.
No.
Elfstedt race. It was in Germany.
Sparkassen, in Munsterland.
That's the one. Anyway, it is Jasper Philipsen with Jordi Meus and a Cofidis rider.
You're on form today, mate.
I'm not paid to commentate anymore, so it's all fine. On the podium, sipping on some non-alcoholic beers. I'll get you started. Three sprinters tackle the kind of percentage they like the most.
If you can't see this photo, by the way, those are not like normal beers. What's that, like 5 litres?
No, 2 the most.
You reckon?
Yeah.
That's a big beer glass.
It is, yeah. But 0% beers.
It's just a lot of liquid.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. Yeah. See if you can better Dan's caption. Get involved in the comment section.
We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN for the next 7 days. But first up, a few comments from our previous 7 days worth of videos, starting as ever underneath last week's GCN show. The first one is from Diederik Kiffels. Sorry, I should have read this before we start recording.
Probably.
That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know.
So Tade and me have one thing in common. We both live in a hilly area, which makes it difficult to do long, sustained Zone 2 rides. The slight difference is his problem is the downhill part, mine is the uphill section.
I love reading GCN show comments. Like, I like reading all the comments, but particularly GCN show comments. I like that. The Finav said, pretty naive of Pogacar to be giving away his numbers like that. Now everyone's going to be doing 340 watts in 5 hour blocks whilst remaining in zone 2.
Yeah. It does make you wonder why more riders don't reveal their numbers when there's little others can do about it.
I know.
There must be a proper reason, I guess.
Yeah.
Neil Blard wrote in saying, Hack or Bodge at 27:22. Have I got that completely wrong?
No, that's right.
All right. Sai says, who am I to judge? Is it not literally your job in this segment to judge?
You know, I literally thought that when I was saying it. I was like, it's yeah. Anyway, but no, fair call, Neil. That is very true. Underneath Dan's video, where you basically get the inside story to the last 10 years of Zwift, haven't you? Which is like super interesting. Basically, we were thinking over the last decade of Zwift, it's kind of actually the biggest thing to have happened in cycling, isn't it? Gravel, everyone said they already did it anyway when it was kind of invented. Disc brakes.
No better, apparently.
Yeah. And then suddenly, here we are. You're like, well, indoor cycling wasn't a thing, really, was it?
Not really. I mean, it wasn't just Zwift at the time that was starting to think about all these different things, but they've certainly made the biggest difference. And like I said at the end of the video, lots of people take it for granted now. You can just jump on something that's quite entertaining, something that feels quite realistic, and something you can do with other people.
Totally. Anyway, some cool comments under that. Dominic Brooks said, I had a wall to stare at, then a TV, then a CompuTrainer, then Zwift. Zwift brought me back from an injury that had me in hospital for a month. Oh, man, sorry to hear that. In one season, I had relearned to walk, started competing, and won a district TT champs. Zwift was the game changer. I've ridden it since beta. It's the best.
Well, yeah, that's the start. Mountain Morgy, stopped cycling in 2016, never used Zwift. Came back to cycling this year, but now I'm partially sighted. Decided to see what the hype was about, and I'm blown away by the platform they've built. Truly a game changer, not just from being more enjoyable, but making cycling more accessible for folks who can't necessarily always join the club runs or head out on busy roads. Very good points.
It is, I think that is one of the things. Is it just, obviously there is an accessibility issue in terms of price, because you've got to pay to subscribe to Zwift, but if you can do that, then it does make cycling more accessible to people.
Well, cycling is different for different people, isn't it? Yeah. Of course, if you live in a place like, I don't know, Tenerife, which is nice weather all year round, which has plenty of quiet roads, you're probably sat there thinking, why would anyone ride indoors?
Well, I saw a comment under that video.
In the middle of a city,
from a guy
Canada,
from California.
It's really cold.
Oh, yeah, really cold.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a good solution for a lot of people, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Which is what Eric Min wanted it for. He was in the same situation of being in cities and not able to get out as much as he wanted.
Yeah. All right, lastly then, under our wider gravel tyres better, like this one from Jezza, I get the impression that Si probably starts his morning commute with 5 beeps.
I like the thought that that's your alarm. It's like the fifth beep, you've got to get up.
Oh my God, that would get me out of bed quickly. No, I beep before doing lots of things, actually. Driving the kids to school on the cargo bike. That's wicked. Louis Duparc said, maybe the fork on size bike kind of levelled off the performance of the tyres. Ah, well, I didn't say in the video, but I pumped it up, so it was really hard.
Oh.
So, yeah. But potentially, yeah, that might have helped, actually. Good point.
And then Philip Cooper, might not like his name shortened. I better say Philip. Could you do a test of gravel tyres on the road? I mean, to get to some nice gravel paths, you still have to do up to 20k on the road to get there.
Well, then that's not gravel riding, is it, Philip?
But what you need is the automatically inflating and deflating tyre device.
Maybe he does.
Solution.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a big topic. Like genuinely, some of the riders at the gravel worlds, like, I mean, there's not many adjustments you can make to a gravel bike, right? But they were all talking about tyres, and they were all talking about tyre pressure. So, yeah, it's a big one.
Right, coming up on the channel this week then, starting with Thursday. On that day, we're going to show you how to complement your Zone 2 riding or training. Indeed. And on Friday, it's 5 things you need to know before you invest in a new saddle.
Yes, this was the day after Ollie did an epic, really epic ride. He went to visit the guys at Sellitalia, and he apparently looks a little bit dishevelled.
I'm not surprised.
I know. Brilliant. I can't wait to see that. On Saturday, we were letting on a poorly kept secret, which is the new cycling mecca. Not Girona anymore, Bassano del Grappa in Italy. So check that one out. Looks pretty blooming cool destination. And then on Sunday, all being well, it's the Gravel World Championships video. So how I got on, basically.
Yeah. How you got beaten by Matt Stevens. That doesn't feature on the gravel. I'm looking forward to watching that, though, Si.
To be fair, Matt Stevens beat me when I did Steamboat Gravel as well.
Oh, yes, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
What I think I can guarantee from that video is that Si will make all of the technical sections look way harder than Vanderpool did on live TV.
Hey, man, that's my special skill. I made the hills look harder than he did, but I also had some really grippy tyres because it was a proper gravel race. So I had proper gravel tyres on. So yeah, they like going around corners, it's like I was on rails. Yeah. It was amazing.
So yeah, before you pass judgment on whether it was a proper gravel course of the World Championships, watch Si going around it first on Sunday.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks for watching, everyone. Also, thank you again to all of the super thanks that we had last week. I can't believe how many are coming in. Very much appreciated.
Oh, so cool. Yeah, thank you, everyone. Warms the cockles, doesn't it?
It does.